Okay, the record button is happening, and now I'm going to mute everyone. Does anyone have to say anything to me before I get started? So I'm going to do that. Okay. So I'm very excited to be with all of you tonight. Some of you are graduates and students of a Society of Souls. Some of you are brand new to the work, came here through a friend or a family member or someone else, and it's exciting to be here with all of you. So my name is Brenda Blessings. I've had probably more titles within the school than I've had, you know, so I'll just go with my name is Brenda Blessings, and I'm with the Society of Souls. What I want to begin with first will be a meditation before we go deeply into the Magi process itself. This meditation has the spirit of this process, and then I want to discuss with you three key tenets of the work of Society of Souls, including the Magi process and all other work that we do, and then I will go into further the Magi process itself. But at different points, I will pause and check in with you. So let's begin with this meditation. So first, I'd like you to just breathe. Do some gentle breathing. Maybe even take a couple of deep breaths. But allow yourself to come into the space, the shared space that we have together. Allow yourself to feel your body, you know, yourself sitting in your chair. Maybe you're lying down, sitting propped up on your bed. But allow yourself to be seated here fully. And take some deep breaths and just come into this space. Allow yourself to be here. To be in relationship with life, we need to be able to embrace more of life as it is, not just as we want it to be. We cannot find true wholeness by choosing only one side of life in reaction to a less preferred condition. So, for instance, whatever you are feeling right now has a silent opposite that is present at the same time. So clarity is present with its opposite of confusion. Having knowledge or belief in something is present with its opposite of not knowing or questioning. Weakness is present with its opposite of strength. Fear is present with courage. Judgment is present with loving kindness. Being stuck is present with movement. Allow both of a pair of opposites to exist. You can go with some of the ones I've already named, or perhaps something else that's up for you, like excitement or boredom. But allow the opposites, whatever they are, whatever you're feeling or whatever arises for you, even if you cannot name its opposite, allow yourself to know that its opposite is present at the same moment. Allow them to exist together, maybe even the named and the unnameable. Allow them to exist together. Open your body to this allowing. Try to relax into them both being present. Maybe relaxation and tension or two that you hold. As you allow them to be here, you may notice or feel a subtle feeling of openness in your body, openness in your mind and heart even. Maybe just very subtle. Maybe a sense of being more, a little bit more present here. This is one of a million gateways to healing and transformation. So allow yourself to settle in here. And I'm going to move into the first key tenet of this work, which we call non-duality. And I will pause after this before I go on to the next tenet. The world is a single thing, a unity that is so whole that it includes duality. It includes difference, difference of opinion, paradox, conflict, multiplicity of being and attitude and idea, and so on. The language for this unity changes from tradition to tradition, whether religious or spiritual, such as God is one, reality is one, or from traditions such as scientific, where physicists seek out a unified theory of everything. This singleness or unity of reality exists prior to our breaking in things into pieces or parts, prior to our naming of these pieces and parts into atoms or cells or molecules or bacteria. This singleness exists prior to our personal dividing of life into things we like or dislike, our opinion versus someone else's opinion, and so on. This unity is not something we have to invent, but we do have to come into relationship with it. This unity is already here. At a society of souls, we use the word non-dual, which basically means one and not two, to indicate this unity, this singularity that is so single that it can include you and me, separation. All of the work of a society of souls, including the Magi process, is non-dual at its core. In a society of souls and people who are attracted to this work, we have friends and companions from many different backgrounds and walks of life, including doctors and scientists, atheists, and religious or spiritual leaders. For us, reality is not only about what we know to be true or believe to be true, but it is also about what we do not know and cannot know with certainty. Let me repeat that. Reality is not only about what we know to be true or even believe to be true, but it is also about what we do not know and cannot know with certainty. This is actually quite a joyful thing, although at times quite challenging to our personal psyches, which often want to reduce the world to the known only, to things we feel we can be in control of, that we can understand. However, in being in relationship with the unknown in this way, we have the opportunity to learn to relax into our ideas and concepts of reality, while simultaneously open to knowing we cannot know everything, and yet we are able to make very informed decisions and take action that is helpful or healing or transformative for ourselves and others. It is as paradoxical as life itself. It allows us to honor our personal ideas and beliefs while simultaneously holding them lightly. It allows us to discover something new, even change our mind and our hearts. It allows our ideas and concepts to exist vividly while simultaneously soften so they are not a barrier or block into moving into the unknown or opening into more and more of reality. a real relationship with the unknowable and the non-dual nature of reality allows us to seek out different points of view and to enter into territory that we previously might have avoided. When there is nothing we need to defend against or close off entirely, including the ways that we're closed off or we limit life, such as our sense of being right or knowing things, we are able to heal and transform. Fundamentally, this is what we're interested in, a non-dual relationship with reality, a relationship that allows us to heal and transform, to embrace ourselves with compassion and kindness, to laugh and to cry, and to come into more relationship with all of life, which includes ourselves, others, and the world as a whole. So I'm just going to ask that you take this in for a minute. The world is a single thing, so whole, so unfathomably whole. That it includes difference, multiplicity, and so on. I'm going to ask you, Daniel, to push *6 and unmute yourself. And if there's anything you'd like to add to what I just said, unpack it in any way that works for you. Feel free to do that before I open it up to the rest of the group. Daniel, you hear me? *6, unmute you. Is there anything you'd like to add to that? Okay, it must not be working when you push *6. So I'm going to push *5 and unmute everyone, but I'm just going to check in with Daniel first. Daniel's acting as my dialogue partner tonight, teammate. So I'm going to push *5, ask him first, and then I'll see if anyone else would like to say something. Daniel, you there? Is everyone there?
Yep.
I think I must have lost Daniel. Okay. That was a large thunderbolt that just came through my air, so there you go. I don't know if that's reality's way of an exclamation point. Maybe it is. reality's way of agreeing. Yes. That's true. Is there anything anyone wants to say or question or anything before I go on? If you do, just start speaking. Okay. So everyone heard me and took in what I was saying. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so let me go a little further then and see if there's something that unfolds from that. So I'm going to meet you again just for the sake of the background noise. And again, if you need to stop me, you can push star 6 and feel free to do that, but I'm going to push star 5 and meet you again. Okay. So let me go to the next tenet of this work.
Brenda, can you hear me now?
I can. Daniel.
Hello. I was there the whole time.
Okay.
Something in the ether was...
Okay. Is there something you'd like to add to that, sweet one?
Well, thank you, my sweet. I so appreciate your invitation. I so appreciate also your inviting us into this kind of entry with the silence and presencing of ourselves and this relationship to non-duality. A part that rises in me to name, well, two things. One is I noticed in your language so much of the beginning, the words you were using included the word to allow,
mm-hmm.
which underscores to me an important part of what's at play here. And I think I would add only that knowing the world is a single thing includes right here and right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, at least in me, that resists knowing that
mm-hmm.
And continues to think that it, whatever it is, that it is somewhere else and that I have to be another way or have to, that this attainment is somewhere else. The invitation I'd emphasize in where you're starting us is that all of it is right here.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thank you, Daniel. I'm glad you got to say it. That's good stuff.
Thank you.
Okay. So now I'm going to move into the next point, and as I said, I'll open it up again. If you've looked at the material, go ahead.
Brenda, it's Pam. I had a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for a long time I've kind of gone with this notion that the world is a single thing, but as you were talking, the question arose in me, how do we know that?
So it's something that you have to wrestle with from that standpoint. I'm not pushing that off on you as in, you know, avoiding the question. Something that you know, again, this has to do with the known and the unknown. Is it something that that I know in my heart and in when I experience the world and when I'm the most awake to how the world works and when I see reality in it, you know, and I'm awake to life, including when it's difficult and challenging and all these kinds of things, then I experience the truth of that. That's a fact. It's a fact for me. At the same time, am I also a human being who sometimes loses that and, as Daniel said, resists that because that must mean it's one, but it does include this thing. So do I also have that part of me? Absolutely. So the question... You know, we talk about in the school, questions are more important, you know, often than answers. So the question of how do I know that is an extremely valuable question for you to live into, you know, like a Buddhist koan. How do I know this? How do I not know this? How do I experience it to be true? How do I not experience it to be true? It's an incredibly valuable question. And asking that question will lead to all kinds of healing and transformation that will be much more valuable to you than my answer. You know, my answer is my answer. But you engaging in relationship with that will bring you to much more than any kind of answer I could possibly give you.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So another piece that I want to bring up is that from the standpoint of a society of souls, there are some words that you will hear us use that for us are interchangeable. They basically mean the same thing to us, but point at it in different ways to this unity. And different ways of expressing this unity for us can be God, Buddha nature, the real self, reality as it is, life as it is. These are all names for this single unity that we're describing. I love in the Jewish tradition that they have 70-some names for God, which basically point to different qualities or attributes of this unity. We don't run away from, I want to name for you, that we also include that individuals have different ideas of God. As I mentioned earlier, we have people from many different backgrounds. We have atheists. We have people who are very scientific. We have Christians, including ministers and nuns, Jews, including rabbis and cantors, Muslims, Hindus, all engaged in this work together. We don't run away from the concept of God. We could exclude that word. We've even made jokes. You could call God Bob if you wish. But using the word God allows what is here, what is another name that we use in addition to real, the real self, and allows what is to actually arise. Using the word God allows what is here, what is actually here, to arise. Whether that is our cherished beliefs around God, or our anger and pain from our histories. So it brings up joy and challenge. This is important. Avoiding the word is like avoiding the proverbial elephant in the room. When we are speaking about unity or the singularity of reality, to avoid God is to walk around and around the elephant, but it winds up controlling our movements, where we will go and where we will not go. The words mother and father also appear in the 38 steps of the Magi. When they appear, they are not about your personal mother and father. However, we are very aware that our images and concepts of our personal mothers and fathers will arrive, places of joy and love, perhaps, as well as places that we still feel in real conflict around our childhoods and places we wish were different in our relationship with them. Since our mother and fathers were our first authority figures, or our first gods, as it were, these also need to arise. In our work in healing our relationship to the singularity of reality, we don't avoid conflicts or controversies. We believe in order to be in relationship with all that is, we need to meet what is actually here for us, not just what we would like to be true. So allowing, as I said, for us, we refer to this, we could use reality as is, we could use life as it is, we can use what is, we can use these terms that are in effect more neutral. and that would be fine, and that's okay for you to do that. But as I said, we do not avoid the word God, because in avoiding it, it is like the elephant. It winds up meaning that we try to go into neutral territory. We try to stay into zones where there is no possibility of misunderstanding, where there is less controversy, where we feel we can meet on a ground of shared understanding. And we are meeting on the ground of shared understanding and shared, we're wanting to work with this ground of non-duality. But simultaneously, this singularity includes the space for difference. And difference in our world, as we know, also includes difference in religion, difference in thought, difference in political thought, difference in, you know, all the things that people don't want to talk about around the Thanksgiving table, you know, race, religion, politics. Life is included. Life includes all of those. So we want to engage with them in a way that we can allow ourselves to be with what we feel, what we know, with our histories, and how we feel about it now in our lives. And we want to open up to the unknown, the unknowable and the unknown around it, to be willing to engage with our hearts and mind and bodies and discover something new, while at the same time honoring our beliefs and concepts, giving them full room and full space, and being willing to learn and discover and go on this process, this journey together. So this is another key tenet of the work. And it leads to then the next thing that I'm talking about, which is the process of inclusion. But I'm going to pause here in case anyone would like to say something. I'm going to once again, Daniel, I invite you to push star 6 and see if it works for you. And then I will push star 5 and opens up to the group.
Thank you, Brenda. Illuminating what you said, or keeping it in context, if we were to avoid controversy, well, let's say the controversy is here along with its opposite. So our desire is to be in relationship with all of it or any of the individual parts of it.
Absolutely. If we want peace, as that example, it has to include its opposite of conflict. It cannot. It's not actually true peace if it doesn't include that. So once again, I'm going to pause, and I'm going to push star 5 and see if there's anything anyone would like to say about that before I move to the next step. And then after this, we'll move further into the Magi process itself. But it's important to lay the ground first of where we're meeting. Okay. Is there anything anyone would like to say? Is there anything anyone would like to say? Question? Comment? Let me know that you're out there.
yes, we're here.
Yep. This is Tim. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I heard a saying recently that the phrase was, the God of our own understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that term.
I think it's a good term.
So that's it.
Okay. Thank you for adding that.
Brenda, this is Hannah. I was able to join late. And in listening to you, I want to add something that I often hear from you. I don't know if you said it already, but in wanting to include all parts of the peace and the conflict, it really is to allow us to harvest the intelligence of each part, the information that is embedded in each state of being, so that we can really put that into use and knit it into the wisdom of whatever understanding and actions we take around it.
Well said, Hannah. Is there anything anyone else would like to add, or question, or thought, or anything?
Brenda, this is Yolanda. My question is, this is all landing and it resonates and it makes sense, and I'm wondering, when you're talking about things that arise, they have an opposite, and like Hannah said, that they can be harvested. And my question is, what about violence? Is that included? And I guess the answer has to be that it is, because it's part of everything. But just if you can say something about that.
Well, it's a very important topic, obviously, and when we get further into the Magi, I'll have much more to say about it. But I'll say a little bit now, because I think it's an important thing for it to arise. Absolutely, from the standpoint of the singularity, that includes difference means that with difference, there can be violence. With difference, there can be, we're going to call this a de-evolution, which is one of the words we use with it, a devolving of actual true conflict. The conflict we cannot bear, and this is the best way to frame it, the conflict we cannot bear personally, usually it's inside of ourselves, the conflict between something we want and what actually is happening, or the conflict between we think one thing and someone else thinks something else. The conflict we cannot bear devolves into violence, whether that's violence against ourselves, where we beat ourselves up, where we are filled with self-hatred, where we, you know, it devolves in that way, or it devolves in acting it out upon another. But it has to do with the true inability to deal with difference and the paradoxical, often opposing things we have going on inside of ourselves. And when we cannot be in relationship with this singularity that includes so much difference, then it gets acted out. That make sense at the moment?
Yes.
And again, we'll have much more to say about it as we go further on. But,
great.
Right. Okay. Any other comments, questions, thoughts at this moment? Okay. Again, I'm going to mute again, and then say this one little piece, and then I'll open it up again before I go further into the Magi process itself. And again, if you feel like I'm muting yourself.
Can I ask you a brief question?
Okay.
You know, when you speak, I get it, but then it leaves me.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I just have to, that's all I want to say. It just leaves. I just wanted to put that out there, that's what occurs within me.
Kathleen, I thank you for the courage to say that. I thank you, first of all, for that courage. Courage comes right along with fear, so I'm sure there's vulnerability in saying that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's often that's true for all of us. Sometimes, you know, we're awake to life as it is, and we can be with that. We can be with that singularity. And sometimes we can't. Sometimes it leaves us completely. It doesn't necessarily leave us even through some controversy we're aware of. It just leaves us. It's like somehow we forget that in the everyday consciousness of moving through life, where we're making decisions of what to eat and, you know, where we're going and what we're doing. Because we have to have the process and the ability to be able to discern between this and that as well. So it often leaves us, you know, and we're not able to hold on to the singularity that includes choosing between this and that. So that's just part of life. What as we heal and we go through many different processes, the magic process is one of those that helps us to do that. As we heal, our forgetting is not in opposition to us also being in relationship to this. And that's part of what you were working with. It's an edge we all must, you know, continue to work with. So I just love the fact that you name it, sweetie.
Thank you, hon.
Which brings me to the third place, which is the third tenet, which is the process of inclusion, not exclusion. As human beings, most of us arrive at a place through exclusion. We put forth certain ideas and concepts, and then we eliminate them one by one until we land someplace. We feel settled, and we go about making our decision and taking action. Or we create a list of pros and cons, and as we come up with more pros on one side of the list, we go with that. So many people engage with our desires and longings for change by trying to get better, to eliminate, exclude things we don't like, such as fear, uncertainty, and confusion. And we try to strengthen things we do like confidence, clarity, and certainty. This has a place in our life. It can be very important, even vital. It strengthens our intentionality and our commitment, our ability to engage with frustration and boredom, contraction and expansion. And it gives us insight into patterns we keep on repeating. We have a saying in our school that has to do with wanting to be an open-hearted human being. And that means open-hearted even to our closeness, even to the places that we're cut off, that we limit, that we defend. So the true human being that we are seeking to bring to the table, to bring to this relationship of engaging with the singularity of reality, is the real person, the one who is imperfect and willing to meet their imperfection, one who is willing to continue, to go on, to keep inquiring into ourselves and into reality, who is willing to have an open mind and heart to their closeness, who is engaged and interested in engaging with the great unity and discovering and healing and transforming, and both becoming more than we thought we were and exactly who we really are and exactly what we're made of, who's willing to be here in life to experience the moments of ecstasy and joy, moments of boredom and confusion, and moments of darkness and light. To experience wholeness, we have to experience what it is like to let ourselves be whole. Whole beyond our small likes and dislikes. Wholeness is not arrived at by a process of deduction or analysis, but by our increasing ability to include until our self and the world are unbroken, connected and together, separate and equal parts of a totality. I will repeat that. Wholeness is not arrived at by a process of analysis or deduction, but by our increasing ability to include, to keep including until our self and the world are unbroken, single, one, connected and together, separate and equal parts of a totality. To be in the world without seeing what the world is an opportunity lost. To be in ourselves without seeing the wholeness of who we are is also an opportunity lost. We have a saying in this work that we are all perfectly okay the way we are, and we all have a lot of work to do. And those two things are not in opposition to each other. As we come to know this, both our efforts to heal and transform and grow and our ability to let ourselves just be unite into the wholeness that was always there and in which we become increasingly able to see and experience and live into. It's a great paradox to be able to make efforts of changing and healing and transforming while simultaneously allowing ourselves to just be. And not flipping from one side to the other, but holding those two things as the unity that they are. So I will once again open it up. Oh, let me go to Daniel first. Daniel, my friend, is there anything you would like to say or add to that?
Well, this process of inclusion is somewhat paradoxical, particularly for me and for many people I know. It's allowing ourselves to just to be. Because if that was not safe in earlier parts of our lives, it can be challenging to go there. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's the gateway that allows the possibility of this realm of healing.
Mm-hmm. Well said, and true. Okay, so I'm once again going to open it up. Since there's some background noise, I'm just going to ask the group, if you wish to speak, push star 6. That's completely open. So push star 6. That'll unmute you. And when you're done, you can push star 6 again and unmute. But if we'll try it that way first to keep the background noise out. Star 6, I'd like to hear from you. I've had a lot to say. I want to hear you.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say that I thought that really sounded interesting and something that would be exciting to explore.
Good. We will be exploring it.
Okay.
Great.
I'm going to mute now.
Okay, great. I'm happy to hear that. Okay.
Hi, this is Sudha. I just want to add, it's pretty intense and challenging. It's an ongoing process. Part of me wants to get it and then stay at the getting place, but it is, I think like what Jason says, efforting. It takes tremendous amounts of energy to be able to be with what it is and including. And it is in the body when it feels to bear that. I just want to add that it's not easy.
I understand. The thing that you're bringing up, Sudha, is when you're talking about the not easy part of this, is that one of the things we understand is that we both were all affected by the histories we've had and the challenges of our histories. And so that comes in as in terms of what Daniel was saying as well, of how we can feel not safe in allowing ourselves to be where we are. What also appears is that Jason often describes it as that we have different bodies that go at different speeds. So our emotions go at one speed, depending on what's going on in our emotions. Our mind can often move more quickly and moves very fast, and our body often moves at the slowest speed. And that has a lot of things behind that, which would be another discussion. But because that's true, we may get it on an intellectual level or even on a gut level. We may get something. But the living into it, the experiencing it and the experiencing it again and again and the practicing and working with it, and then living into it in our bodies and in our lives is how it integrates. And that takes time. You know, it's a process. It's just that. Life is a process. Being in reality is a process. We don't get it all at once, and then we're able to live it all at once. We may get it all at once. Even people who have these unitive experiences in which they have these big experiences and they experience the unity of reality, you know, Jason likes to joke that it can take people 20 years to get over that. Because it takes time to integrate that, to include and bring in the parts of us that resist that, that think that's crazy, that thinks, you know, look at the stuff that's going on in the world, that can't possibly be true. So it's true. All of those challenges are there. Okay.
Brenda?
Yes?
It's Candy.
Candy?
I was struck by what you said about the not flipping from efforting to just being, but actually experiencing both simultaneously and allowing both to arise simultaneously. And I was struck by that, but not really... I was struck by it, but didn't really understand it. And I really appreciate your saying that about the body, the experiential, the living into it moves at a different speed. And that helped me forgive myself for not being able to do them both simultaneously, both the efforting and the just being.
Right.
So thank you for that.
You're welcome, Candy. That's absolutely true. It's like what I was talking to Pam about earlier when she was asking about, you know, how do we know that in terms of the unity. You know, it is something that we can experience, but the really integrated in our hearts, our minds, our bodies, and really integrated to live into it, you know, that's again, it's a process. So I can say this, and I'm planting seeds here for people to, you know, imagine, just even put forth the idea, what would life look like if I could both effort and let myself be at the same time? What would it be like? To just even sit with that as a question is going to open up all kinds of things for you. But to not put it forward as a hard and fast goal or something that you're failing at, as in I'm, which is what you said, but to understand, just to even inquire into it, what might life look like if I could effort, do my healing work, do my transformation work, do this work while simultaneously relaxing, trusting that who I am, where I am, is completely okay. It's a nice question to live into. It's actually more than a nice question. It's a transformative question to live into.
I think it's a constant companion question.
Absolutely. It's one I have above my desk every day. I have a whole series of ones above my desk, and that happens to be one of them.
I may have to put that on my mirror. Thank you.
Those are the two places I put little notes to myself like that, on my mirror and above my desk. It's where I'm at, you know, in there primping, you know, brushing my hair, doing those things, brushing my teeth, or I'm often sitting at my desk. So, yeah.
Thank you, Brenda.
You're welcome. Anyone else?
Hi, yes. Brenda, this is Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi. So I had this feeling when you were speaking about inclusion instead of exclusion that they're not things that we exclude. Because there was this, it's really hard to language, but there was this feel of, oh, how overwhelming, all these things that I exclude. The color of my hair, the shape of my size, you know, right, these little zillions and zillions of things that are unacceptable to me.
Mm-hmm.
But as you spoke, I began to sink into the way that they're more like shapes or areas,
mm-hmm.
and that integrated in the way that we talk about in Society of Souls and the way that you're talking about here, to include one of these areas is enormous,
mm-hmm.
to actually integrate it,
mm-hmm.
and not hold it as unacceptable,
mm-hmm.
at arm's distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so this work is takes time, as you were just saying, but it's not a lot of little pee up a hill, you know, pushing a pee up a hill, Sisyphean, got to keep going all the time with every single tiny little thing that I exclude all the time. It's,
mm-hmm.
it feels... the way you're describing it and the way that I'm feeling it today feels very different than I've ever had a relationship with the Magi before, and in the inclusion before. Kind of feels like an atmosphere, and
mm-hmm.
a lot more friendly,
mm-hmm.
And reliable, that's a good word, reliable
mm-hmm.
than I've ever felt it before. So, thank you.
You're welcome. That's great. I love it. Okay. Anyone else?
This is Florence. It makes me think, Brenda, that there's a tremendous amount of patience that
mm-hmm.
has to come in, because I think of all of the times that I confront a portion of reality that I really do not, I want to change it. I don't want it to be that way. I want to resist it. And to have a sense of trust that it belongs where it is,
mm-hmm.
and to have the patience and forbearance for myself to say, and this is where I am right now, I don't want it. Mm-hmm. And to stay with both of those concepts, it takes a lot of patience, because sometimes it takes time mm-hmm. before you can reach the place where you can let it in.
Mm-hmm. So you've named a couple of opposites that I think are very important to name at this moment. So impatience has as its opposite patience.
Yeah.
So we don't want to get to a patience that excludes impatience. Impatience
exactly.
is part of life.
Yeah.
We also we're also not after a form of trust that excludes doubt.
Yeah.
The Magi process is not idealistic. It doesn't demand that we be some particular kind of way. What it asks us to do is to be whatever way we are and to be in relationship to that. So if we're impatient, to be in relationship to impatience, while also knowing that there is an opposite of patience.
Yes.
If we're in the place of doubting, we want to be able to include the doubting while also knowing that there is an opposite called trust.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to jump from jump out of impatience to force ourselves to go into the idealistic view of patience. You know, we don't want to jump out of impatience to get there. We want to know that that's included in it. You know, it's part of what it means to be a human being.
Right. And sometimes it just takes me time to watch this to acknowledge that both are there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. There's no question, sweetie.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times that I'm completely lost in my impatience, my frustration, all those things. And then I have the gentle reminders that the other is also there. But I have to let that live vividly, that that's where I am and that I'm efforting in a particular kind of way, which is efforting to get rid of my impatience or efforting to get someplace. And then I also have to remember efforting comes right along with, allowing where I am,
mm-hmm.
trusting where I am.
Yeah.
I understand. It is life. Okay. Well said, Florence. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to mute.
Okay. Anything else that anyone would like to add at this point? So let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to do now and where we're going to go next time and where we're going to go next time. So it was important, I felt, to set the environment, the atmosphere, the shared field of what we'd be with this process. Then what I want to do now is talk a little bit about the sort of broad strokes to do with the Magi process itself and what we'll be doing. And I'm going to give you a little bit of homework, things to work with. And then in the next class, next week, I'm going to talk to you. We're going to go into a great deal in the very specifics to do with what it means to bracket, which is what we do before we work with the 38 steps of the Magi process. And I'm going to lead you through that, and we're going to talk about how to do it. Today I'm going to give you some preliminary homework that will kind of be a little bit of like what bracketing is, but mostly it's to help you begin to work with this process of inclusion rather than exclusion. So that's what I'm going to do. Daniel, is there anything you want to say before I go on?
No, thanks, Brenda.
Okay.
Brenda, I have a question.
Absolutely.
This is Ilana. Are we going to be receiving the assignment also by email, or should we be keeping track of it in our minds?
I'm going to have you work with it yourself in terms of writing the next kind of step. And then when we move to the next step, I'll probably have you share some things in the group, people who are willing. Okay?
I just meant in terms of the homework.
Oh, the homework, what I want you to do is you'll be doing that yourself. You'll be journaling it and working it, and then I'll ask you about it when you come to the next class.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the Magi process is a way of participating in the creative machinery of the world. It is a way of participating in life's movements from the known and the unknown and back again. The 38 steps of the Magi, if you've looked ahead at them, again, we're not going to get into them tonight, but the 38 steps are a poetic, metaphorical description of what is really there, the machinery of the world. They describe the essence or fundamental nature of what you will find at every step of the journey. When personal desires and questions come into contact with the impersonal or vastness of reality. They describe, in other words, the stages we encounter as we move into the unknown. The statements are not only a description, but exist at that level of creativity, which poetry and metaphor do, where the statement itself is kind of an action or a sort of making. In other words, the sentences reside in the place where seeing what is and participating with it are exactly the same thing. I will say some of this again when we get to the 38 steps, but I want to give you some of that now because inevitably we will look ahead and we will look at the 38 steps and go, what? Those are weird. What does that mean? So I just want to frame that at the moment. Using the Magi process involves the body in a unique way. We might say that when we use the process, more of reality passes through our physical form than before we used it. In other words, our capacity or bandwidth is increased, and we're capable of being with more of the singularity of reality as it shifts and moves and changes and morphs and goes from the known to the unknown and becomes this and that and goes from the specific to the less specific, from the creative to the destructive. It is important for you to know this because as you use the process over and over, you'll become aware that your body is being affected, that it's being transformed and healed into more reality. As I mentioned before, the different bodies we inhabit, physically, emotionally, and mentally, each operate at different speeds. For most people, the mental sphere moves very quickly, and our body tends to move slower. It's a rare thing for all of our bodies, emotional, mental, physical, to be in the same time, as it were, to be affected and transformed all at the same time. Imagine if you could hear something, feel its truth, and enact it all at the same time. It happens, but it's still a rare thing. If it were less rare, then changing our lives would be simpler. Resolving inner and outer conflict would be more reproducible, something we could more easily count on being able to have our desires, longings, and dreams, and being able to move with them, and the inevitable conflicts that arise as we try to change the life we have. The Magi process is a unique experience because it does, in fact, affect all of our bodies at the same time. This is one of the reasons that it's so powerful. When a breeze ripples a small dish of water, it's one thing. When the same wind waves the water on a lake, it's one thing. In the same way, a change of consciousness that affects our spiritual, mental, and emotional bodies at the same time brings them into alignment. The impact and effect of the changes is enlarged along with our ability to understand and work with it. This is another way of saying that the Magi process is non-dual. It both enlarges our personal understanding, and in being enlarged allows us to see more of reality itself. Before I move into the homework, I'm going to ask again, Daniel, is there anything you'd add to what I just said? Daniel, star six?
Yeah, no, thank you, Brenda.
Okay, great. For some of you, you may be impatient, like, can we get on with the bracketing and get on with the, you know, and I understand that, again, impatience comes right along with it. But I wanted to really set the stage so that we are coming from this, you know, shared work together so that we could then move more quickly into and working with the challenges that arise as we move into the bracketing and into the 38 steps. What I'd like you to work with in this next week has to do with making uncertainty work for you. So what this means is that often, as an example, this is an example that we often use when we describe the Magi process. We've all played with certain ideas about changing history. Like, what would the world be like if I could go back in time and kill Hitler during the First World War? The answers to questions like that seem obvious. It might have saved the suffering of untold millions. But we cannot be completely sure that something even worse might not have arisen. In this case, perhaps a more successful malevolent leader, someone who actually succeeded in winning the war. And once we leave the realm of questions or desires and enter in such as these, like what would happen if I changed the world in a big way, and enter more subtle areas that don't have the benefit of hindsight, we get into more and more uncertainty. What I mean by this is that we often try to take the path, as I was talking about, to do with exclusion, which is actually a form of certainty. We try to know the exact way to get something, the exact steps to take, we want certainty that whatever choice we make is going to work out perfectly, is going to work out fine. We often want to be able to control what happens, that if I choose to do this, then everything's going to work out, that if I choose to go this way and I bring up a difficulty with my spouse or I bring up a difficulty with a friend, they're going to respond well and it's going to go ahead a certain way. We often want some kind of certainty that things will work out. What I'd like you to work with is the true ambiguity of the world, or the uncertainty, which is that I would like you to allow yourself to sit with this week some of your own desires for change, and I'd like you to journal about it. just write about this in some way, that I would like to change X, Y, Z about myself. So it might be this. It might play out like, I would like to change the way that I am, that I'm my anger. I would like to change how I'm always angry at, you know, I'm picking and I'm having fights with my sister. And I'd like to change that. I'd like you to sit with the ambiguity of it and ask yourself, would life actually be better if I wasn't angry at my sister? It might seem obvious to you that it would. Consider the possibility of what might it look like if I wasn't really, if the anger wasn't there, would it really work out the way I thought it would work out? Or would something else happen? You might put forward several ideas for yourself. You might say, I want to have, you know, I want to be with a certain type of job, and you name it. And then allow the, again, ambiguity or uncertainty. What would life look like? What do I think life would look like if that happens? And what are some other possibilities? Maybe it would make me happy and maybe it wouldn't. Maybe it would solve one problem, but it would create other problems. In other words, I want you to come into relationship with the fact that ambiguity is part of the world, along with our needs and wishes and desires, and that what we want to do is not reduce the uncertainty, but allow it to become alive. Doesn't mean we're not going to wind up figuring out how to get to clear answers and how to move within that, but right now, I want you to allow the ambiguity to come up for you to question, like, you know, this is what I want, but is this really the best thing? Will this really make me happy? I think that this is the way it should go, but, you know, maybe that isn't the way that it should go. I want you to play with ambiguity. Again, this is going to lead us to the bracketing process, but it's things like, is this what I really want? Is what I want really for the best? What do I think will happen if I get it? Am I wanting this because I'm trying to avoid some other kind of struggle? So I want the anger to my sister to go away, but is that really because I'm avoiding telling my sister what I really feel and that she's hurt my feelings and that our relationship needs to change? So what I want you to do is play with ambiguity. And you do it by looking at desires for change, longings that you have, both in your personal world, or maybe it's also in the world as a whole. You know, I want the violence in the world to stop. What do I imagine the world will look like if violence in the world stops? Does conflict have a place in the world? I want people to stop saying mean things to each other. What do I imagine the world will look like if that doesn't happen? So it can be fairly specific, as in naming a specific type of thing that you want to have happen. It can be more open, like, you know, I want violence in the world to stop, or I want the earth to heal, or I want, pollution, the shifting of that. But name different things throughout the week and write about them a little bit. It could be just a paragraph. It could be a few sentences. But allow ambiguity or uncertainty to arise, like, is this really the best thing? What do I think will happen if I get this? What do I imagine the future will look like if this happens? That kind of thing. So tell me if that's clear or if you have questions about what I just said. Again, this is going to lead us to the bracketing process. But rather than immediately go to the bracketing, which I want to frame more next time, I want to frame it a little bit more and then take us through it, I just want to give you the opening space to start playing with part of the nature of the bracketing process, which is ambiguity and uncertainty. Daniel, was that clear, or would you add a little something else to it?
Thank you. It felt clear to me, though I've worked with it, and so I'd want to leave room for the way it sounded to everyone.
Okay. So I'd like to open it up and see if anyone has a question about what I just said. if that's clear, what I'd like you to play with this week. Push star 6 if you have a question.
Brenda?
Yes.
This is Catherine. I think it's quite clear, your instructions, and I look forward to getting into it because I think it's going to be very, very rich.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Good. Okay. Other questions or comments about the homework?
Brenda?
Yes.
It's Bobby.
Hi, Bobby.
I have to tell you, I have just recently started coming back to the, not having done much work with it at all, and today was my first day working with it, and I just happened to be working with a huge issue about my sister. So I
well,
just...
there you go. I guess I was picking that up.
Oh, anyway, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is great, and I absolutely the uncertainty, just to be open to that was just very revealing.
Good.
In the process for me. So, anyway,
good.
I'll mute and someone else can talk.
Good. One of the things with working with this exercise is you'll find a place in you that may not be comfortable, which is the place of you that says, if I was God and I was in charge, this is the way the world would work. Just in case anyone wants to come across that. that will arise, the part of us that wants to control and that wants to make the world over in our image of what we think should be going on. And that's part of what I want to arise. It's important. It's part of the transformative and healing process to let that part of ourselves that, you know, and I want to be clear that that's not a bad part of ourselves because we often have very clear ideas, and our clear ideas can be accurate. They can be true. But when we don't allow the uncertainty or ambiguity to enter into the picture, then usually what we try to do is force our will upon the world. And it's very different to come to change, or force our will upon ourselves even, trying to get rid of something we don't like. And it's very different to come to change accepting that there is ambiguity, there is uncertainty, there are these questions. It is much more compassionate and much more kind. And really, I haven't found anyone who actually heals through beating themselves up. As much as we think it might work, as much as we try it every single day, I haven't found it actually works. Just let you know. So this is important to come in touch with. Any other questions, comments, thoughts at this point? There we go. Okay. Yes.
Hi. Does it make sense to do this with the issue that we want to bring into bracketing?
Yes.
Or just play with this with other stuff as well?
Other stuff as well? But absolutely some issue that you want to bring into bracketing, bring that as well. It'll be helpful to play with several different issues so you can see how it shows up in several different ways and what goes on and let whatever's there come up. But absolutely bring something that you intend to bracket next time that when we're working.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Brenda, it's Candy again.
Uh-huh.
What you were saying about if we don't allow the ambiguity and we force upon our will upon the world or ourselves,
I can already see the value that with the ambiguity, clarity has a very different texture and a very different effect on what we wish were was different.
Absolutely.
It's really potent. And because it's a more unified clarity.
Absolutely.
It's not a willful, personal only, unhealed, ego-driven clarity.
Absolutely.
It's no longer opinion. It becomes more truth. It may not be absolute truth, but it becomes more truth.
Well said.
Brenda, it's Daniel.
Yes, Daniel.
I would return to what you raised about kindness and compassion.
Yes.
Because knowing that our different aspects will move at different speeds, or that our body, mind, spirit, and so on will respond in different ways, that this may trigger a variety of things, that engaging in this process will affect us each in different ways at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So from the outset here, as we start to do it, an invitation into meeting what arises with kindness and compassion.
Well said, Daniel. Again, you may want to listen to the meditation that I brought us into in the beginning. And basically, you know, again, it has to do with bringing the opposite. So if you find yourself impatient, allow yourself to know patience is there. If you find yourself judgmental, allow kindness and trusting to be there. So it's important. Because these things will arise, it's difficult. It's a challenge often to meet ourselves. Because, again, this isn't a process of idealization. It's a process of truly meeting what's here, the imperfect human being, the imperfect world. And so kindness is extremely important. If you need a reminder of that kindness, you can always, I have lots of other little recordings. This isn't a pitch for my recordings. It's a pitch that there are a lot of other audio recordings on my website that address some of that. And they're titled something like Being Kind or Accepting or Being Open-Hearted to Our Closeness. They could help you. They may help you as these things arise. So I want you to, you know, get what you need. So there's also a thing on my website of a way that you can contact, and I could send a sentence or two. But I encourage you to listen to the recordings if you feel you need support within it. And you can back off from it. Part of the kindness might be you do a couple of things that you put forward as desires you have, and you've played with ambiguity, and it's been very rich, and you've said, that's enough. Part of kindness is saying, that's enough for me this week. I'm going to do those two things, and I'm going to let it sit, and I'm going to let it percolate. I don't have to do. So don't think it's not about quantity. It isn't about doing 20 of them so that you feel like you've done all your homework this week. There may be some, you know, again, overachieving, efforting, and versus being able to trust where we are. So if two is enough, then two is enough. If you feel you can do more and let it stir up that, then that's fine too. But thank you, Daniel. Absolutely. Kindness is a key tenet of the work.
And let's include all the other time around this process also. That is, the things that are triggered or the things that come up may show up as we do the journaling, as we do the homework you've invited. And it may also show up in lots of other ways and other times as we're with our work, with our family and friends, by ourselves, and other times outside the actual practice.
Right. Again, that has to do with the bodies operating at different speeds. So mentally, you may bring forward one issue and work with it and journal it, and you may feel certain emotions around it, but then you may find yourself having a conversation with your sister, and it gets triggered in a whole new way. So, yes, it's important to know that that's true. It may not just show up when you're writing. It could show up when you're walking down the street and someone irritates you. So,
So I want to thank you all for coming tonight, for those who are just listening to the recording. I want to thank you for participating in this. And as I said, next time we will be working with the bracketing and going deeply into this, and I'll want to hear a little bit about your homework and some of your experiences in working with ambiguity. And we'll go from there, and we'll unfold into the 38 steps, and we'll unfold in being able to work with the entire process. But it's been a delight to be with you.
Thanks so much, Brenda.
You're welcome. I'm going to unmute. So,
thank you, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank
you,
Brenda.
Thank you all
for being here.
Bye-bye.
Okay, darlings.
Good night.
Bye.
Night.